Without any further delay, I would like to turn today's live meeting over to your presenter, Scott Castle. Scott, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So my name is Scott Castle. I'm the product manager for Electric Accelerator here at Electric Cloud. I'm here to talk today to talk to you about running parallel distributed builds on Microsoft Windows HPC server. So why are we here today? There's a problem in software development, and it actually occurs after code has been written, after software's been developed in Visual Studio or anything else. And the problem is that when you go to actually compile, link, and test your code, the process of actually building that software takes far too long, and it's limiting the ability of companies to go to agile and continuous integration models. One of the solutions to this problem is to run those builds faster, run them across a distributed cluster of machines, get acceleration to the actual end-to-end build time, and allow your developers to be much more productive by getting faster turnaround time, faster QA cycles, and less risk to schedules. There's a challenge there, however. Massively parallel architectures require high-end infrastructure to support that, and choice of operating system as a platform is a very critical part of this infrastructure solution. First, let's talk about the impact of slow builds. If you have a slow build and test process, and when I talk about slow, I'm talking about builds that take 15, 20, and 30 minutes, all the way out to 4 to 6 to 8 to 10 to 12 hours. These are systemic problems in embedded systems development, network device development, application software, stack development, mobile devices. Almost anyone who's building software of any significant size has a problem with software build times. There's lost productivity for developers and for QA staff because of slow builds. There's wasted time and frustration for waiting for builds if a developer makes a change and kicks off an incremental or a full build to test that change and then has to wait for 2 or 3 hours to get a response. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to have downtime. They're going to be wasting time that could otherwise be spent implementing functionality and features. It also means that a QA staff, which is faced with problems like broken builds, that means that they have to be down while those builds are being rerun. So not only do you have the problem of having to go out and try to figure out why a build broke and fix it, but then you have that 2 to 3 to 4 to 8 plus hour cycle time waiting for a new full build to come out so that QA can start testing. This means you have fewer bugs fixed and fewer features added for any product cycle release. So developers aren't dumb, and QA isn't dumb. And if so, of course, they're going to take shortcuts to help to avoid these long builds. They'll do partial builds instead of full builds, do incrementals instead of full builds. They'll build and test one variant or one platform as opposed to all of them. So if you're building a video game, you might build for Xbox but not for PS3. If you're building a mobile device, you're building against a VxWorks target but not a QNX target. And so you get minimum set builds, and you have much more frequent broken builds. You have features that are tested only on one platform. QA also may end up skipping tests to meet deadlines. They may not do the full system test or integration suite because it just takes too long. And this impacts your ability to actually meet deadlines with quality code. Most severe is the impact of this problem in the late stages of software development. If you're getting close to a release cycle, if you're getting close to a ship date, you're going to be doing everything you can to get that software out the door, and that means that quality is going to go out the window if you have a limiting factor like a build time of 2 to 3 hours or longer. Long build times also completely limit your ability to implement development strategies like continuous integration and agile development. Agile requires you to do a build for every SCM action. Continuous integration means you're building for every few check-ins or on a regular basis, every check-in or every half an hour or every hour. And if your build takes 2 or 3 hours, you just don't have enough machine time. You don't have enough cycles in the day to actually get those builds done. So it really prevents you from doing that. It also means that monolithic development becomes completely unsustainable. If you're building a large software stack that has one entry point and your developers really can't do componentized builds, that means that they're going to be faced with the full product build every time they need to build and test. This becomes unsustainable as software gets larger and larger. This results in slow time to market, fewer features, and poor software quality. The value of faster builds is just to take those same problems and turn them on their head. Decreased cycle times mean increased team productivity, more features per release, more feature content, faster time to market, and more builds and tests that can be performed in a particular release cycle, meaning higher quality code, reduced schedule risk, and greater team agility. Your teams are better equipped to respond to change, things like customer problems that are found in the field or problems that are found in QA. Responses to these from developers can be fast. They can be half an hour if your build times are short, whereas they might be 4 or 5 hours if your build times are long. So given those values, what is the specific impact given where you are at today? Well, if you look at this graph that's on this PowerPoint slide here, this is a matrix of impacts of build times. If you have a 14-hour long build, if you have a very long build, you're building something like Windows Mobile from scratch, or you're building Symbian OS, this is where your build doesn't even finish overnight. You can't even do a nightly build. So developer builds, they're impractical to rebuild before check-in. That means the developers really won't be able to do a full build before they check-in, which means you're going to have constantly broken builds on your main branches. Build times in the 6-hour range means that you have overnight builds, but really developers still don't have control of their own builds. They can't do Agile, they can't do CI, and they can't guarantee that their check-ins are actually going to work. Once you get into the 2-hour range, now you have the same-day fix for broken builds. So if the mainline branch is broken, your CI build is broken, you can actually maybe repair that and get the new build out that same day. But developers are still less likely to do a full rebuild before check-in because 2 hours is a long time to wait. 30 minutes, you're getting down to continuous integration territory. Developers can reasonably be asked to do a full build before the check-in. And as you get faster and faster down to the 1-minute range, now developers really have instantaneous response rates. Well, at Electric Cloud, the Electric Accelerator, our goal is to move you at least 2 bars in this schedule. So if you're at a 14-hour build right now, we can take it into 2 hours. If you're at 2 hours, we can take it down to 5 minutes, or possibly even faster. With that in mind, let's talk about parallel builds as a solution to this problem. The requirement for real build acceleration has 4 elements, and these are requirements not just for my product, but for any approach to parallel builds. Number one, a parallel build system has to give you fast and accurate builds. And really, we're going to talk about this more in detail, but the real limiting factor here is the requirement that you must understand the dependencies between target and target to target within the build process. The solution, whatever it is, has to be robust and scalable. It has to be able to support high build volumes. It has to be able to support throwing lots and lots of CPUs at the problem as your build software increases. And it has to be able to stay up. You can't spend more time managing the system than you do actually using it. It has to work within your existing environment. It's really, really great to say, I have a magic build solution that's going to speed up your software builds and change all of your developer practices. But you're going to have to throw away everything you've ever built and re-implement from scratch in order to use it. It's a non-starter. No one can do that. It must not require any kind of a significant redesign to your software to be able to use this. And finally, it has to have infrastructure support. You can't say, hey, I'm going to run parallel builds. Just give me a 16-core machine and it'll be really fast. I swear, it's not going to work if you haven't prepared the infrastructure correctly. And you need to have a high-performance platform to support high-performance computing. So I talked before about how dependencies are the limiting factor to parallel builds. What do I mean by that? Well, builds have inherent parallelism. They have inherent concurrency in their structure. At a basic level, what you want to do in a software build is take source code, individual source files, and compile those source files into objects. Build those objects into libraries, link those libraries into executables, and eventually produce a release that represents your software stack. Well, in the ideal world, I'd like to run each one of those operations on a separate CPU out on a cluster of machines somewhere and get my build done in unit time. And that's not a new idea. There have been lots and lots of implementations of this. You'll see hand-built things. You'll see make-j or distcc. There are even parallel options in some out-of-the-box toolkits. However, they're traditionally limited in their speed impact, maybe to 2 or 3x improvements in build time because there are some dependencies between all those individual operations that I'd like to do in my build. Some of my object files have to wait for other object files to compile. Some of those libraries can't be built until a certain number of objects are built. And those dependencies are typically expressed in your make files or in your Visual Studio projects and solution files. However, not all of them are. Most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with solution files and project files, and you'll know that if you build a solution file in serial, you'll build project after project after project, and your developers know that too. They depend on the fact that project A is going to build, and then project B, and then project C. And within those projects, source file A is going to build, and then source file B, and then source file C. And so if source file C depends on the output of building source file A, that's fine. However, if you turn that up on its head and you say, I'm going to run this build in parallel now, what happens is that you're going to find places where there are implicit dependencies not expressed in any of the control files to control your build, and a parallel build tool is going to break. It's going to run some of those things out of order, and your build is going to fail mysteriously. This is why make-j2 might work for your build, but -j8 won't, and this means the approach isn't scalable. The result, in the best case, is a broken build. In the worst case, it's actually an inaccurate build. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. So how does Electric Cloud solve this problem? Well, when we run a parallel build, we actually monitor at the file access level what files are read and what files are written by every single target rule in the build. A target rule is where you're actually compiling an object into an executable, or you're moving a file around. Any one of the individual operations that occurs within a build is a target rule. And those target rules have dependencies that are expressed by the actual file usage. We collect that information, and we're able to detect, while the build is in flight, what the actual dependency map is of that build because we have that information. That allows us to automatically detect if we do something out of order. If you look at the example on the slide, you'll see where, in serial, what I want to do is I want to compile class.cpp into class.obj, and then I want to link class.obj into app.exe. Very straightforward. But if I run that in parallel, what I might actually get is running class.cpp and compiling that into class.obj at the same time that I'm trying to link class.obj into app.exe. This causes, in the best case, a broken build. In the worst case, maybe you had an older, out-of-date version of class.obj, maybe an incremental version or a previously cached version, and that's being linked into app.exe, which means that the result looks like the build succeeded, but the changes that you just made and are trying to test aren't actually in the application you're running. Our software can detect that class.obj link into app.exe consumed a file that was produced earlier in serial order. Serial order is the linear list of things that would happen if you ran this with a single thread of concurrency. We can detect that we violated serial order and we broke an implicit dependency, and we can throw that job away and transparently rerun it while the build is in flight without the developer even having to know. This means that our software is 100% accurate at running these builds in parallel, and that enables us to throw as much concurrency as we can handle at the build. This unlocks extremely high levels of performance, 10x, 20x, or even greater improvements in build time. We also, of course, save all the implicit dependencies that we discover through this process into what's called a history file, so that the second time or third time or nth time through the build, we know what to schedule around so that we don't make some of these mistakes, and we can actually become even more efficient. Now, the architecture that we use to do this is fairly straightforward. It shouldn't be too groundbreaking for anybody who's listening to this call. On the left-hand side of the slide deck, you'll see developer machines and production machines. These are the build machines, or the make machines, as we refer them to them. This is where you currently run your build. This is where you actually execute Visual Studio, or you currently type nmake or make. And those machines communicate with two other resources. They talk to a cluster manager, which is a resource allocator, which sets up relationships between those make machines and individual build machines in the cluster. Now, the cluster machines are simply normal Windows-based or Linux-based machines. These are rack mount servers or desktop machines. They're the infrastructure machines that are used to actually execute the compiles. And those build machines run two things. One, they run a set of agent processes, typically one per CPU, that actually execute the work. And they also run a filter file system called the Electric File System that itself provides two capacities. One is it allows us to actually track that file system usage so that we collect all the usage from the tool. We're not reading make files here to understand dependencies. We're actually looking at how the compilers and linkers and all the tools used in your build actually operate, which is why we're toolchain agnostic, and I'll talk about that as well in a moment. But finally, the Electric File System also provides a virtualization layer so that the file system on the make machine, on your developer machine, your production machine, is the file system that's used out in the build cluster. This means that if you're using a specific version of Visual Studio and your teammates in different parts of the office are using different versions of Visual Studio, or you're using particular versions of compilers or linkers or toolchains, or you have access to specific source spaces, all that information is virtualized out from your build machine out onto the cluster machines that are contributing to your build while that build is in flight. This means that there's a very small amount of overhead running that build compared to maintaining a cluster of parallel machines that has to be manually configured for each build that we'll support. Now, of course, what I've done here is I've pushed the burden that your local CPU used to manage out onto your network in order to distribute this build to a bunch of machines. So the next question you're probably going to be wanting to ask me is, well, what kind of an amazing network do I need to have to make this actually work? But it turns out we've done a couple of things to make sure that this actually works correctly in a production mode. Number one, we do on-the-fly compression of everything we send across the wire from the make machine out to the cluster and back. We get about a 3x improvement in data density for almost no CPU time. This is a variant of LZW we use to compress the files. And this means that we have already saved an enormous amount by transferring those files in the compressed format. In addition to that, we do caching at both the make machine and at the cluster during a single build so that, for example, if I'm building a bunch of source files in the Windows application and I send out windows.h to one of the cluster machines, I don't have to keep sending that header file out every single time I have a compile that needs it because I've cached it at the cluster. We also have a shared cache so that the individual agent machines in the cluster don't have to each have their own copy, and there's peer-to-peer sharing that's going on between the different actual host machines in that cluster to make sure that we have the network load that would be incurred by transferring that file back and forth in the cluster on a localized switch as opposed to across your wide area network. Finally, we also have a versioned cache to make sure that if you modify some of those header files during part of the build, we know which versions are appropriate to which particular target rules. We know where in serial order that header file would have been modified, and we know what version you're actually asking for. This way we're always accurate, we have very, very good cache accuracy, and we never make any mistakes while at the same time offloading the work. Finally, the work in the build process is about 30% file transfer, but about 70% just checking the up-to-dateness of source files. And although an up-to-dateness check requires almost no I/O in terms of actual data transferred, it is a request and response across that network. We cache up-to-dateness checks at the make machine and at the cluster so that the efficiency of this is very high. We actually cut down 95% of total network traffic by these strategies. This means that Electric Accelerator works just fine in 100 megabit network environments. Gigabit's fine as well, but you don't need it. This will work in your normal production environment to your developer desktops that you're using now. What kind of performance can you expect on this? Well, at Electric Cloud, we build lots of open source packages just for our own regression testing and speed testing purposes. And you can see what kind of scalability we have here. For example, building Samba, the open source networking stack, we had a 16.4x improvement in speed on 20 CPUs. This is a near linear performance. In fact, that near linear performance scales up to over 32 agents, over 32 CPUs per build. Our clusters, of course, support hundreds of build machines and hundreds of agents running at the same time, but a single build can be accelerated over 20x just by throwing some CPUs at it. This means that to fulfill the scalability requirement that we talked about in those four requirements for a parallel build system, if your build increases in size, if you have more software added to it, or you add more developers to your team doing more builds, all you have to do is add more CPUs to that cluster, and the builds go faster. Now, Accelerator is a great proposition. I said I'm going to give you a whole bunch of machines to run your builds faster. But what's the impact of that? Do I now spend 20 times as much effort to maintain those machines? Do I have 20 times as many build failures because my build machines are constantly going down? The goal behind Accelerator, of course, is to say no to that. Accelerator is designed to be robust so that those individual machines that help actually compile your targets, they actually run the machine, the commands in your build, those machines are designed to be failover and fault tolerant. That means that the cluster agents, if parts of the cluster goes down, the jobs that they're working on are simply ignored and redistributed out to other machines that are alive in the cluster. This means that if even large segments of your infrastructure go down, your builds are going to continue. Your developers will continue to get accurate results, as opposed to normal systems where you would have to have major firefighting problems every time a machine goes down. This also means that there's no need for scheduled downtime in these clusters, because IT can bring down parts of the cluster, upgrade them to the latest hotfix or patches, or change whatever configurations are required, and then insert them back into the cluster, and no one knows the difference. Administering the cluster is very simple. We provide a web-based interface and an administrative interface to allow dozens of machines being managed as easily as one. We have lots of facilities in the tool to do uploading files and downloading files to and from the cluster and to manage the status of the cluster. We have reporting that allows you to see what kind of utilization and load you're experiencing. We have reports that can catch how many users, how many builds, how often are builds breaking. It provides you information about how the cluster is being used and improves your efficiency. Finally, the clusters are designed to be used by your entire team. They support multiple simultaneous builds. Because of the virtualization technology, they support different tool chains running simultaneously. The configurations that are being defined by the individual build machines are mirrored out completely, including your environment variables, your Windows registry, as well as your file system. You can have multiple OS platforms in the same cluster. So these clusters can be Windows and Linux and Solaris. And Windows builds will go to Windows machines, Linux builds will go to Linux machines, and Solaris builds will go to Solaris machines. And finally, there's a priority system in place for node allocation so that you can set business policies saying, this is an integration build that has a high priority, it gets as many resources as it needs. These are developer builds. During the day, they have a high priority, but at night, they have a low priority. You can control exactly how you want your infrastructure used through Electric Accelerator. No, I made a lot of noise earlier about a requirement saying that you have to work with existing infrastructure, and this is extremely important. At Electric Cloud, we've worked with hundreds and hundreds of software companies doing builds, and none of them have ever told us, yeah, we can throw out our entire infrastructure and replace it as long as we get an improvement in speed. It just doesn't work. It's a non-starter. And we know at Electric Cloud that you really can't change developer process. So to that end, Accelerator is designed as a drop-in replacement for GNU Make and Microsoft NMake. It also plugs into Visual Studio seamlessly so that your developers don't have to learn a new interface or a new tool. You can use existing make files and scripts, solution files and project files, your existing tooling and compilers. We're toolchain agnostic. We use the exact same input options and provide the exact same output as the tools that we emulate. And we also produce identical log files. You can actually take a build that ran locally with NMake or against a cluster with Electric Accelerator and get the exact same thing. You can diff those files and compare them and make sure that they're accurate. Accelerator is also designed to work with Windows HPC Server. I talked before about how you need a high-performance infrastructure to make sure that this stuff works, and HPC Server provides that infrastructure. It's the fastest operating system that Microsoft offers. It's designed for massive network communication and supporting massive loads with high numbers of CPUs and high-density configurations, and it allows better management of large clusters. Some of our customers have built clusters upwards of 900 nodes in their clusters, and managing that scale of server can't be done by hand. It can't be done manually. You need entire IT staff to do that, and HPC Server helps to significantly mitigate that problem. It's designed for data center use. It supports tools like System Center, SMS, and MOM. It allows you to roll out patches and upgrades very easily and manage system state. HPC Server is the best possible platform for Windows development in a parallel environment. I talked before about how the cluster manager can give reporting, and you can see in the screenshot here, we have at-a-glance reporting providing information about how your clusters are being used. This allows you to do things like look at, am I getting the build times that I used to be getting? Are build times increasing? Am I getting increased load? Do we need to add more machines and more CPUs to this cluster? Are there certain engineers who are using the cluster extensively, but other engineers who are rarely using it? Am I seeing a lot of broken builds? Do I have problems from some quarters of my development effort? The cluster manager provides at-a-glance and pinpoint reporting about this. Let's talk about platform choice for a moment. If you're developing on Linux or Solaris, that's fine. If you're developing on Windows, there are significant choices to make here. You can start with Windows XP Professional, 32-bit edition of that. It's fine. It runs Visual Studio. That's really the important part. But XP really isn't designed for data center applications. It's not designed for lots of network connections. It's not designed for high-throughput gigabit plus or Blade Center-style application development. A better upgrade to this would be Windows Server 2003 32-bit. This is a server-grade OS. It can be hardened. It has a better networking stack. It's designed to support the devices and drivers that you would have in a high-density cluster. But the best here, of course, is the HPC edition, the 64-bit edition of Server. This can address more memory so that you can have multi-core and multi-agent configurations. You can run more compiles and more links in parallel on machines that have lots of memory like this. The management tools that are included with HPC Server really help to support the IT infrastructure that's going to be required for large clusters. And this is really optimized for data center deployment in every possible way, rolling out the servers, managing them, even licensing terms, really designed for data center applications. Now, if I give you a parallel build tool, it gets the benefit of a faster build. But one of the impacts of having a faster parallel build is that the build structure is going to be different. And you need to be able to visualize what actually happens to your build when it's run in parallel so that you can debug any problems and you can find areas where you can improve efficiency to shorten build times. Electric Insight is the parallel build tool's companion that shows the results of running Electric Accelerator build on your actual infrastructure. Electric Insight screenshot here shows you information for each one of those little blue boxes or red boxes in that screen. That's the individual target rule being compiled. And this shows you in detail how your build looks when it's running in parallel. It shows you areas where there's a single job that has to run before lots of other jobs can run in parallel. These are choke points that you can identify. There are tools in it for searching through and finding errors and problems in compilation. There's extensive regex-based searching, so you can find where specific compilers are used or specific linkers. You can find information about what files are actually included in every compile, what files are touched, what dependencies there are. This allows you to actually understand the structure of your build, and this is a unique exclusive to Electric Accelerator. A couple of things you can do with Electric Insight are target dependency analysis. If I have two target rules in an NMake-based makefile, Maybe I say that foo depends on bar. Well, is it accurate? I don't know. In a large recursive make structure, you're not going to necessarily be able to manually read a make file and understand what the target dependencies are. But Electric Insight, because it's run through Electric Accelerator and we have a dependency map, can expose that information for you. If you click on two jobs in this report in Electric Insight, it'll say, all right, the left-hand job depends on the right-hand job. It says so in the make file, and here's the line in the make file and the actual dependency. But it will also tell you, here are the actual files that are common between those two targets, where I have a file, I have an option file that's created by one and read by another. This tells you that this is an accurate dependency. It tells you this is a necessary dependency. It will also help you find places where there are inaccurate or inappropriate dependencies, where you're over-serializing, or you have a dependency that says that foo depends on bar, but it really doesn't. Electric Insight, as I talked about before, can also help you understand the parallel structure of your build. At this example, this is a screenshot of part of Electric Insight, and it's showing a graph of a build where at a certain point in the middle you have a choke point. That blue box highlighted in pink is actually a job where there are lots of other targets that are dependent on that particular job, and those targets are highlighted in red. This is an area where if I move that pink job earlier in the build, if I change the serial order of the build to move it earlier, I could save that gap time, the white space in between those jobs, so that I didn't have so much downtime in parallel fashion, and I could actually improve my build times by making that modification. Electric Insight is really the only way to understand those dependencies and understand that structure and to actually visualize how to change that. Finally, Electric Insight can help you with build speed projection. This will help you understand, if I add more CPUs to my cluster, if I add more CPUs to an individual build, can I go faster? How fast can I go? Electric Insight, because it has information on job duration and also on dependencies, we can actually run our scheduler with different numbers of CPUs and determine very, very accurately, within about 2% accuracy, how fast your build will be. And this allows you to say, all right, well, if I add 20 CPUs, I get to a build time of 2.5 minutes. But if I add 20 more CPUs, I'm only going to get down to about 1.5 minutes. So I really, you can make judgments about what kind of infrastructure costs you want to incur and what kind of changes you want to make. Now, this software is used by a lot of organizations worldwide. We have customers in all different verticals, networking, semiconductor, cellular, ISV. This software is really impacting the ability of development teams all over the world to do agile development, continuous integration, and really change their development processes. So just to wrap up, Accelerator and HPC, some of the benefits here, up to 20x faster build times, fewer broken builds because your developers can check in more often and they can afford to do full build testing. Builds run on centralized hardware so that you don't have to be spending quite so much money on developer desktop machines. Minimizing bottlenecks through high performance using a data center optimized OS like Windows HPC. And OS support for high density servers, an operating system that supports things like InfiniBand backends, high density rack mount servers, and high density blade centers to get the best support for massive network and process load. Learn more. Microsoft HPC has its website at microsoft.com/HPC. Electric Cloud has a great number of resources available to you as well in our resources element of our website. You can get white papers, solution briefs, and information about both Microsoft HPC and the Electric Accelerator solution here. And finally, talk to the experts. Send an email to info@electric-cloud.com or call us on the phone. Help us help you improve your build times and solve some of your build bottlenecks. At this point, I'd like to request that anybody who has any questions, please submit them. All right, so I have a question here. Can Electric Cloud Solution support distributed teams? Yes, absolutely. Electric Accelerator can support teams in different geographic locales. You'll need a cluster in every location, but because we can do virtualization and replication, those clusters can support developers on a variety of hardware in different locations and different platforms and configurations. Another question here, what's required to adapt my current scripts? This is an excellent question. As I said before, insertion into your build process has to be lightweight, it has to be transparent, otherwise your developers will reject it or it'll be too complicated to actually use. This doesn't actually require much. Because Accelerator replaces your make tool or integrates in with DevENV, it means that the tools below the make level, the compilers and the linkers and the archivers, all the tools you're actually using in your build process can stay the same. We're tool chain agnostic there. And the tools above that, if you've written Perl scripts or Python scripts or wrappers or web-based interfaces that drive your build, those will call into the same type of tool, providing the same command line options and reading the same input files and producing the same outputs as your existing build tools. This is a drop-in replacement for Microsoft NMake. All right, what types of performance improvements do we typically see with clusters? We typically see 10 to 20x improvements in build time. At a starting point, if you had started with a 10 CPU cluster on Windows HPC, we typically see about a 7x improvement in build time. If you scale it up to 20 or 30 or 40 CPUs, we typically see up to 20x improvements in build time. Can all developers be given access to be allowed to queue their own builds? Absolutely. Developers work from the client application on their desktop machines. This is typically a client application that looks just like GNU/Make or Microsoft NMake or plugs into Visual Studio directly, and it allows them to invoke their own builds from their local desktop machines. This is no change to the process they have now. It just allows them to run builds faster. Does an InfiniBand network make much of a difference? This is also an excellent question. Yes, absolutely. Having a back-end InfiniBand infrastructure in Blade Center machines means that you have the best possible communication medium between those cluster machines. And because Accelerator makes a great deal of use of our back-end caching in the cluster, we really need the communication between those machines to be very fast. We also need those machines to be as high performance as possible to churn through compiles and get those results back out to the developer machines. We have a question here. Will builds have to be changed if they rely on specific drive letters, or are they virtualized? The drive letters are virtualized. Everything in your configuration on your Windows machine is virtualized. So if you are building from a specific drive letter, or you have a substate drive, or you're building from a network drive, the make machine actually defines the access to those files. So make machine provides them transparently to the agent machines. The agent machines run the compiles and write the results back through that filter file system. The configuration on your local desktop machine is the one that rules. So that means that there is no additional configuration required to those agents in order to make this work. Question here from Brian. Are the performance improvements similar for C#++? Yes, absolutely. Accelerator is largely targeted at large software stacks. We're not talking about builds that take a minute or two linear. We're talking about builds that take 30 or 40 or 50 minutes, and that means there are typically large numbers of components in those builds. Even though C# is more of a batch-based compiler, the actual software build process is much larger than that. And because Accelerator speeds up not just compiles, but every part of the build process, all the targets in the entire build, that means there's lots of opportunities for parallelism, and Accelerator performs very, very well on C# architectures. Question from Dave, will this work with Team Foundation Server source control? Absolutely, because we're really tool chain agnostic, and because we work with anything driven through a Microsoft build process with Visual Studio, means this should work just fine with TFS's source control. Now, to be clear, we do not work with MS Build, so that if you're using MS Build to source your build projects, that is only supported in a sort of like what's called a coarse grain concurrency mode, where we can call multiple MS Build projects that can't parallelize within them. However, if you're using Visual Studio solution files and project files, you should be just fine.
Okay, are there any more questions?
All right, well, I'd like to thank everybody for their time. And if you'd like to learn more, please visit Microsoft's website at microsoft.com/HPC or Electric Cloud's website at electric-cloud.com.
Okay, thank you, Scott, for today's presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's Electric Cloud Live meeting. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.